Hello, everyone. Welcome to the fourth level of forgiveness, as expressed in the fantastic 16th century work of Kabbalistic Musar by Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, entitled in Hebrew the Tomer Devorah, which I've reworked in an English translation and with a commentary called the Kabbalah of Forgiveness. In this fourth level, Rabbi Cordovero focuses specifically on the family dynamic and on the special nature of forgiveness that is required within families. I'm an only child, and so we had a tight little unit of, you know, father, mother, only child. But with my wife, we have six kids, and boy, have I got an education about family dynamics, watching them grow up and interact with one another. And I see that it's really a very complicated process. But what I'd like to do in this short excerpt is focus on the idea of the Jews as a family unit, which is really the direction of the Tomer Devorah in the original Hebrew. And then I'd like to expand it a little bit and talk about humanity in general, because there is a fundamental connectedness of all human beings with their single parent in heaven. And we'll explore some of the discussions of that. And then we'll get down to some pragmatics to see, you know, how can we actually implement this level of forgiveness both within our families, where it's really crucial, and also with people around us as a whole. So to understand this properly, we have to start with the basic idea that one owes more of one's forgiving energies for one's family. This is kind of a given, I would think, in most societies, but certainly in the Tomer Devorah. For example, in the laws of charity as codified by Maimonides, there's a whole list of what's called kedima, or precedence. And one is obligated to give, for example, to the people of the poor people of one's own city before one gives to the poor people of another city. One is obligated to give to poor members of one's own family before giving to the other strangers poor. One is obligated to give to oneself before one gives to one's own family. Now, these are all really complicated and fascinating questions that you'll have to explore in some other YouTube channel. But for the time, or you know, hopefully in Maimonides himself. But for the time being, the idea is that they're like concentric circles of relationships, and one has more of an obligation to the people in that concentric circle, starting with oneself, than one has to the people on the outside of the concentric circle. Despite this fact, one has obligations that extend throughout. I mean, one has obligations to complete strangers as well, but obviously if, you know, let's say, God forbid, a person's brother needs a kidney and a total stranger needs a kidney and you're a match, it would seem wrong to give that kidney to the total stranger than it would to give to one's own brother. There is this idea of flesh being a connector, of family relationships being connective, and the fourth level of forgiveness recognizes that we have to go the extra mile to forgive our siblings, our children, our parents, our cousins, and so on. Even though they may drive us crazier than anyone else, we have more of an obligation to forgive them. Now, the Ramak, that's the acronym, by the way, of Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, the Ramak specifically touches on a complicated issue regarding the nature of the Jewish soul, which according to Kabbalah has five distinct levels. There are three levels that somehow, you know, infuse the human body in various organs, the heart and the brain, for example. And then there are two levels that somehow reside above the human body in some kind of metaphysical sphere. Going from lowest to highest, they are the nefesh, ruach, neshama, that reside in the human body. And then there is the chaya and yechida that reside above. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama are fascinating. They are compared, for example, to a candle, which is made up of three parts. There's the wax, which is like the nefesh, the lowest part, which is like kind of like the basic vitalizing soul that just, you know, animates life. But it is something that, you know, always seeks the bottom. It always wants to go to ground, like a candle wax will melt. And then there is the flame, which is the opposite. The flame is the most ethereal of the elements of the candle, and it wants to rise up on high. That's like the neshama. And then there is the wick, which is the connection between the lower level nefesh soul and the higher level neshama soul. And somehow the wick or the ruach holds these things together. This is also really fascinating stuff. If you read the book, you'll see I have a little bit more discussion there. And of course, there's a lot longer discussion in other Kabbalistic works. But our purpose for now is not to get onto that topic, but to go to the two that are above them. And in the model that Rabbi Moshe Kardovero relies on, it's as if that each individual human being derives his or her soul function from these two larger soul repositories that are above, from the Chaya and Yechida. If you want a metaphor, the Piasechna Rebbe, a very important 20th century rabbi, also known as the Eish Kodesh, who died as a martyr in the Warsaw Ghetto, actually just outside the Warsaw Ghetto, but he was in the Holocaust. It's like there's a huge vat of wine suspended above all their heads, and then there are conduits that descend down into each individual human being. And that vat of wine is like a metaphor for the soul, or a simile for the soul, and that each of the wine itself is the soul material, the soul content. So here's the idea. Even though we all may look very different, and some of us may contain larger souls than others, and we can actually change the amount of volume of soul that we can ingest. At the higher level of the Chaya and Yechida, it's like the wine that comes down that is the soul material that infuses all of us. We are all from the same source. We are all sharing the same soul material. And that's this very important idea that we all constitute one family, that we have special relationships with each other. Now, the Ramak, sort of reserves his discussion or directs his discussion towards Jews, because he is writing this book, after all, in Hebrew for Jews. But one can understand this metaphor to a certain degree as applying to all humanity, because we are all descended from the same spiritual parent. We are all descended from the same biological parents, in fact. And so we do have a fundamental connectedness that is superior. We're all of the same species. Where, I have more of a relationship to another human being than I do to a tree, for example. And so we should recognize this level of connectedness. Nevertheless, being true to Tomer Devorah and the direction that the Ramak takes, he's specifically looking at the relationship between Jews as a family unit within the larger family of humanity. Now, taking it from that perspective, let's look at it, how does God feel when people are distressed? God is like a parent who feels tremendous agony when people are having difficulty. Now, it's true that, God is capable of doing everything. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient. God is ubiquitous, all of these things. And it is one of the great mysteries of most monotheistic religions, try to understand, why there is evil, or to put it in the Hebrew term, tzadik v'ralo, why do the righteous suffer? But if we set aside that huge question, because it's not really our point here, there are so many passages in the Jewish rabbinic corpus that speak to the issue of God suffering along with humanity. When humans abuse one another, when humans are violent to one another, there is pain to God directly. And the Ramak offers several verses that specifically, in a biblical context, allude to God's suffering. So we have to understand that God has a special level of connection to humanity, and God suffers along with them. And when we understand that, we can furthermore understand how we should relate to each other on a more healthy basis. As Rabbi Lipsker of Bal Harbor once told me, quoting a Hasidic tradition, it's kind of like when, how can we speak ill of one another if we realize that, let's say you're talking and there's like you're saying lashon hara, you're saying evil speech about some other person, you're gossiping about some other person, would you say those same things if that person's parent was listening in? Would you want that person's parent to hear you maligning them? And how much more so if that other person, the subject of your evil discourse, is actually the only child of this parent from his or her old age, you know, the special connection when it's their only precious jewel kind of child. Oh my gosh, you know, that would just be an incredibly cruel thing to do. And obviously we want to refrain from it. So this is the idea of recognizing that we're all connected in a very basic way. Now, let's take it to the pragmatics. There's some beautiful passages here, both in the text, and I found a few that I've included in the commentary that mean a lot to me. So, for example, Rabbi Eliyahu Dessler, a 20th century rabbi, when discussing these concepts in a different vein, he talks about a metaphor of, like, let's say a person is cutting a piece of meat on his hand. Now, that's really stupid. I think you really shouldn't do this. Kids, don't try this at home. But let's say you've got a piece of meat and you've got a knife and you're cutting the meat. And as you're slicing, your right hand cuts your left hand. So then Rabbi Dessler asks a question. Does it make sense for the left hand to become angry with the right hand? Obviously not. The right hand is not to blame. It's the human being to blame, let's say. But for the left hand to be angry with the right hand is ridiculous. So too, says Rabbi Dessler, you know, when one person harms another, you know, you have to address the claim and you have to try and rectify the wrong. But getting angry over it is, to a certain degree, missing the point, because we are all one family. We're all one unit, and we have to, you know, deal with our problems, but not necessarily being angry with each other. I know I'm simplifying a little bit, but put it another way. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, a great Tana of ancient Israel, great teacher of ancient Israel, he has an amazing medrash in which he says, you know, imagine that you're sailing in a boat. And as you're, you know, in the middle of the ocean and there's a whole bunch of people in the boat, the person next to you picks up his chair and pulls out a drill and starts drilling a hole in the bottom of the boat. And you turn to him and say, what are you doing? You're putting a hole in the bottom of the boat. We're going to sink. And the guy looks back at you and says, well, what's it to you? It's under my seat. I mean, after all, I'm only putting the hole under my seat. I'm not putting it under your seat. And that obviously misses the point that when we put a hole even under our own seat, of course, that's going to sink the entire boat. This is the whole idea of the fourth level, is recognizing that we are all in the same boat. So two last things. First of all, there's an amazing German word, which I'm going to put at the bottom of the captions here because it's such a great word. We don't have that word in English. Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude literally means the joy that one experiences seeing the shame of another person. So let's say, for example, you know, and one of the examples I give in the book is, let's say a hypothetical, you know, you're at a wedding and someone comments on what you're wearing in a way that makes you feel a little embarrassed, because you feel like they've noticed that, you know, your dress or your suit is a little tired. And then as you're just beginning to feel this emotion, someone else walks by and accidentally bumps into your interlocutor, and he or she spills a glass of wine all over their own outfit, glass of red wine. So what do you feel at that moment? Oh, that's Schadenfreude, the feeling of, ah, see, you got what you deserve. You are making fun of my outfit, or you are like looking down on my outfit. Now look at your outfit. Totally unkosher kind of emotion, something that we really have to try and control. Schadenfreude is not a healthy emotion to work on this fourth level of forgiveness. We have to try and release that Schadenfreude. We have to try and, you know, have Mitgefühl, or sympathy with another person, and imagine how they must feel when that happens to them. And the final teaching, which I found also very meaningful for myself and in my own work on this level, and this is a teaching which I have heard ascribed to the Baal Shem Tov, the great founder of the 18th century Hasidic movement. I haven't been able to see this in writing anywhere. Perhaps in the comment section, if you know where this occurs, you'll send it to me. But apparently the Baal Shem Tov spoke about the mitzvah of V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, you shall love your fellow as yourself. And, you know, it's a very difficult mitzvah to do. How exactly do you love another person as much as you love yourself? You know, we're so deeply connected to our core identity and being. How can we love another person at the same level? So the Baal Shem Tov apparently said it's very easy. When another person has a simcha, like they have some kind of happy occasion, a wedding, circumcision, bar mitzvah, whatever, then go and be mesameach with that person. Go and share in their simcha, in their happiness. And also, when a person has something go wrong in their life, God forbid they lost someone in their family, or they lost a job, or something went untoward, something went in a way they really hoped it wouldn't happen, then go and share in their sadness. That is how one loves one's fellow as oneself. Okay, wow, that's a tough level. I hope you'll stick around for the fifth level. Thank you very much for watching.